Hi, everyone. I'm Katie Parker, grateful, recovered alcoholic. Okay. I'm in my old stomping grounds here. I actually went to school at Brazosport High School. And, I grew up in Houston, but moved down here just long enough to go to high school and then moved up to Austin when I was 17. And I got to see Ms. Shaw, my English teacher, sitting over there, which is just, I almost introduced myself as Kate Ostermiller. And actually Ms. Shaw is a part of my story. So there is an amends in there that hasn't been made yet. So, all righty. Life is good, yes. But it is wonderful to see you. The minute I saw you, I recognized you immediately, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that's my English teacher. I'm also making an amends tomorrow to somebody. It's 35 years late, and I'm very excited about that. And this program is absolutely wonderful. I've got lots of friends here, and I'm very happy to have you all show up and support Alcoholics Anonymous and my talk. I've had the gift of sobriety since October the 28th of 1984, and that is such a gift. So many things have happened in my lifetime. The honor to speak at any event, be it my home group or any AA event, is always an honor, and I want to thank Reba for having me and the committee for choosing it. Now, I don't know if the committee actually chose me. They chose my husband. However, when he found out it was where I went to high school, he said, "You really want my wife, because that's her old stomping grounds," which I thought was pretty kind of another alcoholic to give up this spot. So I'm very excited, and I've been sober for 25 years, and a lot happens in 25 years. I come from the school of AA, where I spend as little time as possible in what Katie was like, and a lot more time in what Katie's like today with God in my life. And so I have two children. I have a daughter, April, who's 31. I have a son, Sam, who's 21. And I have 1 3-year-old grandson named Max, who I'm just crazy about. If you have grandchildren, you know exactly what I'm talking about. The opportunity to spoil them rotten. It's like, you want a popsicle before dinner? Sure. You want two? Have at it. So the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous got me in touch with a power that is so in love with me. I had no idea that was available. And I've gone through many different phases of that in recovery. Today, the God of my understanding is absolutely crazy about Katie. There are times that I can sit in quiet time and be brought to tears that this God of my understanding today loves me that much. And that's not always been the case in sobriety. As a matter of fact, there were times I was like, where are you? Are you listening? And so my story rolls out pretty simply. I was born in 1958. I'm the youngest of three, which means I was tortured. If you're the baby of the family, you know exactly what I mean. Most all youngest children are always, they come out almost just prepared, right? They're always looking around, always watching every exit. Who's doing what? How many mashed potatoes are still left? They're coming around, you know, always trying to grab what you can out of life. And a lot of that is just who I am. I mean, I really, really came out of the womb always looking over my shoulder, always seeing where the exit was. And I just thought that was a lot of part about who I was. But the truth of the matter is today I understand there's a whole lot of alcoholism in this self-centered alcoholic. I have a home group, and my home group is the primary purpose group in Austin. And we study the big book line by line. And that's a part of my story in the fact that the book came alive to me about 6 years ago, in a way that I had never seen it before. So when I tell you bits and pieces about myself, it's how, you know, the book says when we look back, and that's always what we all have here is hindsight, right? I mean, I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism. There's so much that I just learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of the things is that the disease was on me long before I ever took the drink. Now, I didn't know that. And for a long, long time, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was unaware of that. I really thought if you had my life, you would have drank too. And that's what I believed for a long time. And it took me, and even though it's in the doctor's opinion or whatever, I mean, we come in here just with as much knowledge as we've got, right? And we grow from that bit of knowledge forward. And so this is somebody speaking to you with 25 years of hard knocks in recovery. But one of the things I did as a kid, I never felt like I fit in. We always talk about the black hole that we all have, but I never felt like I fit in, so what I wanted to do was stand out. I was the kid who had to overachieve in everything to impress you. Now, in doing so, a lot of it was, I don't know if you guys remember the game Red Rover, Red Rover. I mean, it was one of those things that when you asked me over on Red Rover, Red Rover, I took out about 9 of you. You know what I mean? I was the one that was always picked first to play any sort of ball game. I mean, I was incredibly athletic. I was very much a tomboy. Still am very much a tomboy. I mean, I know I'm dressed up, but I am very much a tomboy underneath all of this. And, you know, I love to hunt. I love to fish. I love to do a lot of things that boys like to do. So I always grew up kind of as that tough kid. And, but one of the things we did long before I ever got a hold of alcohol was something called hyperventilate. Oh, see, I know you guys know it. Not all groups of Alcoholics Anonymous are aware of this incredible journey of hyperventilating. But you get a towel and you wrap it tight and you strangle each other until you pass out. I loved it. Now, I really believe you could almost do that to determine if you're alcoholic or not, because the kids that came out of that and ran from the room, I really do not believe had the problem of alcoholism. The ones that came out of that and went, oh my God, do it again. Man, do it again. I believe we were destined for a pretty rough ride. I love that. Now, at the time we were doing it, I didn't think anything of it, but now when I look back, and another thing is I was a pretty sick kid. I had a lot of bronchial problems, and I absolutely loved Vicks Formula 44, the black stuff. You remember that? And, I mean, I just hit it right out of the bottle, you know, and this is long before I ever took the drink. I do remember the burn. I remember a lot of things about that. But I'm tooling along in life, you know, My father actually was a traveling salesman for Union Carbide. He was some sort of an engineer. I still don't know if it was an electrical engineer, civil engineer, or whatever. But he did something for Union Carbide, and we moved to Houston when I was 5. He had also played for the Steelers. So that was something I always remembered about my dad. I mean, we grew up with football, but alcohol in our home was tons of fun. I've listened to a ton of inventories, let me tell you. And alcohol was not always fun in a lot of families, but in my family, it was fun. And we partied. And that's what it was called. We're just all partying. You know what I mean? We had the open bar. My parents had highballs. We had weekend party after party after party. The kids got to run in between everybody, and alcohol always represented fun. So I didn't think anything different of it. As a matter of fact, when I came into this program, I really thought I had lots of outside issues were my problem. But don't touch my alcohol. My alcohol is not a problem. As a matter of fact, my alcohol was very much my friend. And it was the outside issues that had brought me down so hard and so fast. That was a tough one to get the grasp of that. But we're tooling along in life, and I'm in the second grade, and I noticed that my mother, she's a stay-at-home mom. It's the 50s, right? My sister's 2 years older than me. My brother's 2 years older than that. You know, your stair-step kids of the 50s, that's pretty much what it was like. You know, the neighborhood kids all played together, you know. 6 o'clock, the news was on. There was 3 channels. There was no iPods, no iPhones, no computers. You know, we all went swimming in the bayou in Houston. Oh, my God. I swear, it looks just like that brown Brazos, you know, and we just swim and come up with branches in your hair, you know, and dirt in your teeth, all those little alligator gars in there, you know. We just loved it. And, but, you know, we had just what I considered upper middle America family. We lived in Memorial Bend. I went to Memorial Junior High. You know, it was just really, everything was great. And then all of a sudden, when I'm in the second grade, I notice my mother's getting sick. And I remembered thinking, it seemed to be disturbing because of the way she smoked. She went from smoking Pall Mall non-filters to a pipe, for heaven's sakes. And then she smoked the little bitty cigars, and I thought, what is up with this? And then the next thing you know, she's in the hospital. And back then, you know, kids were not allowed in the hospital. Isn't that something? You know, it's almost, you almost forget that until you have to tell your story, and then you remember it. And she went into the hospital, and I remember that we got asked to go to the hospital to see her. Now, little did I know that she was dying. So we go into the hospital, and everyone's, you know, doing the whisper thing, and you're walking down, and I'm just thinking, this, all I can remember is, get me out of here. This is terribly uncomfortable. I still don't know what my brother and sister were thinking, but I do know for me that I was very concerned, that I didn't want to be in there. We walk in, she was a fairly small woman, and these, she's hooked up to all these machines, and I just remembered thinking, you know, I want to get out of my skin. So we end up leaving, and the next day my dad comes into the bedroom and he sits on the bed and said, your mom died last night. And, you know, guys, I don't know about you, but if you lost anybody in the 60s, you didn't go to grief seminars and you didn't do grief. You got rid of it. You got rid of it and you moved on. You pulled yourself up from your bootstraps and you just moved on. And that's really the best my dad could do at the time. And you know, I swear when I think about this story, it amazes me because I had no idea I was going to almost relive the exact scenario in my own life, which still today is unbelievable. You know, you talk about life being the circle of life and how you relive what was one of your biggest, you know, shocks that your parents did or whatever. And I've done 100 things worse than my parents ever could have done to me. However, they were the first on my inventory. I think that is important for all of us to remember. Yes. Mom and Dad. And, so my dad, you know, it was back in the 60s. She died in 66. And, you know, he left Monday through Friday and he worked. And my, mother was a stay-at-home mom, and this is just the way it was. And so he needed to get either a housekeeper, a live-in housekeeper, or a wife in quickly. Now, I had no idea that my father was such a player. But wait till you hear this story, okay? In 6 weeks, we had a mom in there already. In 6 weeks, he was married in 6 weeks. And she had two small children. One was younger than me, which made someone the baby and not me. Now, that is a problem. Are you with me on that? And I remember at one point, now they only lasted a weekend in our home. And see, you can't make this stuff up, okay? It's shocking. You know, our alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Wait till you hear my dad's. Clearly one of us, right? Well, this woman comes in for one weekend. She's got two smaller children. I remember we went to the country club for something, and the swimming pool was empty. There was no water in it, and I wanted to push this little kid in there. Yeah. Oh, now you gasp, but I'm in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. You had those same thoughts, yes? Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is not the PTA. And so I remembered thinking I wanted to push this little girl in because my older brother was really digging this little kid, right? You know, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a problem. You know, I've already lost my mother. I'm not losing the notoriety of being the youngest. And no matter how much torture it comes with, right? Well, she's gone after a weekend, and I only have one black and white photograph of that event to be able to say it did happen. And then 3 months later, in comes another woman. Now, this one had no children. All I remember was she was an amazingly beautiful woman. She was on the front cover of Life magazine. I mean, I'm telling you, my dad must have been quite the player. Now that, you know, I'm not in the second grade anymore and I get to actually see what he was hitting on. You know, he was landing some pretty good deals, wouldn't you say? I mean, you know, and he wasn't this big football player. He was like a little fire plug, you know? I mean, he was a little bitty, you know, 5'10". Little guy. And she lasted 3 months, and then she was gone. And then in 3 months later comes another one. Now, this one came in suede hot pants. You remember the hot pants? Yeah. She had suede hot pants with snaps up the side for quick entry, right? Yeah. These are things you realize when you're older. Oh, yeah. And I just remembered thinking, va, va, voom, man, who is this? And that ended up being the love of my father's life. But this was three moms in an 18-month period and six live-in housekeepers. Yeah. So here's the deal. It did not make me alcoholic. Absolutely did not make me alcoholic. But it darn sure had me believe some old ideas. I had lots of old ideas when I came in here. And that's what this, the third column of a four-column inventory is about, right? Is for Katie to understand, what did I put in my mind, especially as a child, to come up with these deep-seated old ideas, these prejudice about myself and about you, and this instant judgment that we alcoholics have, this sense of entitlement that I have that's unbelievable. I mean, I love it. Bob and I were talking about the handicap spot. I mean, it's against the rules to park in a handicap spot unless I'm in a hurry and it's just for a minute. I mean, right? See, I mean, you know, now today I would not do that. Now I'd consider it. I absolutely would consider it, but I wouldn't do it. So, you know, that's kind of what we're talking about here. These old ideas, they bubble up like crazy. And I have to be willing. I don't even know their old ideas until they bother me. See, as a small child, I came up with understanding how life works. And I made decisions, and a lot of them based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. And so when I came into AA, of course, I really thought for a long, long time my only problem was alcohol. Just get the alcohol off my back and I'll take it from here. I had no idea that I was driven by fear as a small child. So I'm tooling along, right? I've got all these mothers coming and going. I just want normal. I want normal. It's never coming back. Now keep in mind, most of us are all adults in here, or at least we'd like to think we are. We know that when you get in a relationship, a new relationship, it's pretty active, wouldn't you say? Are you with me on that? So keep in mind, you know, my dad's in three very active relationships. So we kids could have just done whatever we wanted to, right? It's Mike, Liz, and myself, and then she comes with her two kids. So we're from the age, it's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And then we all get into outside issues because we're growing up in Houston and we're all drinking lots of Boone's Farm apple wine, right? Oh yeah. Lots of spinata. I remember a kid throwing up one time in the woods, and he threw up spinata, and it was red, and I thought he was internally bleeding. I remember thinking, somebody help him. He's bleeding. And somebody's like, he's puking, man. I'm like, okay. You know, well, here's the other part of that. You know, when I was young, there was lots of booze at our house, like I said. Outside issues were a little easier to get, yes? You know, that was just the way it was. However, we drank a lot, and we drank as often as we could as kids, but it was tough to get, so you had to sit at the 7-Eleven, right? Do you remember that? And it was 18, you had to wait for the creepy guy to pull up. See, I always love who laughs, because you're either the girl or you're the creepy guy. And I know the creepy guy is in here. I know the creepy guy is in here. And now the creepy guy he always drove because he had to be old enough, right? And so you'd go up to him and you're about, you know, I started drinking at 12 and I go up to the creepy guy, you know, and say, look, can you buy us some Boone's Farm apple wine? He's like, sure can. You know, and you're thinking, you know, we're 12. Your alcoholic life seems the only normal one, you know. Oh, so what you do is you get the booze from the creepy guy. He wants to hang with you, and you have to lose him quickly. And you're on bikes, and we're quick. You know, it's almost like E.T., you know, on those bikes. You're over to, into the woods, you know. And then we had our spot, you know, and we've always lost him. A bit like trying to flick a booger off your finger, though, I do have to say. So I am drinking as often as I can, getting my hands on anything I can, and doing everything I can, right? I'll never forget the first time I drank. I'd love to say, you know, I drank from the first day I drank. I remember the way it felt was great. I'll never forget the first drink, right? that what alcoholic doesn't, you know. I mean, I have heard some speakers say they can't really remember their first drink. I remember my first drink. And it was the old depth charge, right, where you mixed about 15 different boozes in one glass. And I remembered the burn, and I loved it. Well, I'm going along, and you know, Ms. Shaw, this is the part that's hard to talk about, is my education. I, from the second grade on, after my mother died, I don't know if I went... I've never cared much for education. I've never liked formal education. I don't like to sit and have somebody teach me. I kind of go blank. I wander. I'm sure they diagnosed me with something, you know. But the truth is, I'm 52 and I find it incredibly boring unless it's something I like. You know, I think it's called self-centered, but we can call it whatever we like. And so I found myself having to cheat because back in the 60s, and for me, in the 60s in elementary school, especially when they knew my mother had died, they just passed me along. I mean, it was like, bless her little heart, man. Her mother's died. You know what? She'll be fine. Are you guys, enough of y'all are old enough to know what I'm talking about. They just passed me on, and I'm grateful they did. I'm glad they didn't hold me back. Because the truth of the matter is, I've been self-employed for 28 years. I'm very successful without an education, and I don't know that holding me back would have done the deal, right? I don't think I'm PhD material, but and that's just for me. But I ended up needing to, when the book talks about on page 62 that the root of my problem is selfish and self-centered. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Now, I didn't get that right out of the gate, but I can tell you what I understand, and I can look back at my life. It says driven by 100 forms of fear. It could have said driven by 1,000 forms of fear. I was so driven. If you told me I couldn't watch out, I'd almost kill myself getting it done. Don't ever dare me. I was the kid who, you dare me, I will ride my bike and jump 2 mountains. Don't dare me. I mean, I had that so deep-seated in me. And one of the things that I guess today is more it will be revealed is that I realized all my life I felt like I must have been such a failure. So I had to push to overachieve. And one of the things was I had to get this education. Now, I cared less about learning, period. 52 years old, can tell you today, I don't want to learn. I'm it's terrible. Geography, I know where Texas is. Okay? And I don't think you really need anything more than that, personally. But, you know, I mean, as long as you know where, and you know that Texas is its own state. It is not the South, right? And so, but one of the things is that, you know, you gotta learn to be a bit of a chameleon out there in the world. And, I have a sponsee, and I swear we're like Dumb and Dumber. I kid you not. And, she is equally as well educated as I am. And she, there's a guy that was at our meeting, and he was from Norway, right? Now, we both knew he was from Norway at some point, but we're standing there talking to him, and she says, he's from Norwania. And I said, he is Norwegian, stupid. And it was like, and I swear, the people standing around us thought, and you're just kind of going, never mind, never mind. But you know, what I ended up doing is I started cheating in elementary school, and I got creative with cheating. I mean, I'm not talking looking over the shoulder cheating. I'm talking about leaving the window unlocked in the fifth grade so I could break back into the school. You know, the number 2 pencil. Is all you needed back then. There were no computers. And a number 2 pencil was sweet, right? I mean, you just take that baby in, sharpened, change that grade, get the key, you know, that had all the answers. And I got so creative that I would get my friends involved. And if I tell them, you know, I can get back into school. And if you want your test changed, you know, tell me and give me $5. And so started making a little money on the side, you know, and I was always an entrepreneur, and I ended up in high school. It got a little tougher, and Ms. Shaw is in the room, and all I can tell you is I cheated all my way through high school, and after the meeting, I do owe Ms. Shaw a very big amends. I know. It's a big one, and However, I'm not going to do it publicly because I think that's important that I not. Get myself refocused here. So I ended up not playing by the rules well at all in life and left home at 15. Now, I left home at 15. I did not run away from home. My father was so tired of how much work I was that he's like, fine. I said, I'm done with your rules. He said, I'm done with you trying to, you know, live under our house. Out of here. So I end up leaving. And at the time, I go to Brazosport, right? And I rent a little house. I actually lived in those apartments that are those kind of condo townhomes that are right down 332. I lived there for a little while with about four or five girlfriends. Your daughter, I believe, was Kathleen was one of them. And all of us. I will not go into how that party started there. Miss Shaw is in the room. And but the girls, I loved them. Rita, all of them, they all made me stay focused in school, right? And they all helped me with my homework. And then I rented a little place over on 2nd Street in Freeport, a little house for Mrs. Singleton for $62.50. And then I, you know, once again, when I say driven, I am determined. I could have dropped out of school. I could have said, I'm out of here, man, and gone and lived on the streets somewhere, gone into Houston, you know, prostituted. I could have done a lot of things. Man, you talk about moral and philosophical convictions galore. My head was spinning with all of this stuff. What was right? What was wrong? What is good? What is bad? But I didn't want to ever play by the rules. The sense of entitlement in my life was unbelievable. What I deserved. Yeah, I've lost so much. Right? So I'm washing and waxing the teacher's cars. They're, you know, once again, I'm very well liked. I'm most favorite. Do you remember that? Most likable. Most. Mr. Phillips loved me. And, you know, I'm freshman favorite, sophomore favorite. I mean, everyone loved Katie. That was just the way it was. I was Brazoria County Fair Queen candidate. Yeah. I never made it to the top, but I was the candidate. And, of course, you know, now being in Freeport, I could just go on and on and on, or Lake Jackson, excuse me, with the stories. But it was good back then. It really, really was good back then. You know, I mean, my drinking was fun. We went out, you know, out in Brazoria County, you know, down River Road, and we had pasture parties. I mean, I just absolutely loved it up until my 20s. And then it started getting really sloppy and really, really ugly. And I ended up graduating high school. I went to summer school. And I tell you, in summer school, man, you can cheat really easy. Oh, my God. I should have just done summer school all 4 years because I had no idea how easy it was to cheat. And that is how I went through life. I have a tremendous amount of old ideas. This upbringing influenced my thinking, right? And this is a disease of my mind. I live in a delusion a lot of times. And so it's always driven by my old ideas. And I think that more than not, it's important to hear what I was like as a kid more than it was in my drinking, because my drinking was like you. I drank a lot and I got in a lot of trouble and I hurt a lot of people, right? So I get up to Austin as soon as I can. I was not a blackout drinker. As a matter of fact, I prided myself on not being a blackout drinker. If you were a blackout drinker, I didn't drink with you. And it got to the point where I pretty much just ended up going to the clubs in Austin to drink by myself because, you gotta drink a certain way to hang with an alcoholic, don't you? Otherwise, you're a problem. And I didn't like problem drinkers. And I didn't like any, I know that really sounds like an oxymoron, but, you know, and I tell you, when I came into this program and I heard outright mental defect, full flight from reality, can't differentiate the true from the false, I felt at home. Didn't you love that when you heard that? I mean, I just, you know, self will run riot, though they usually don't think so. Come on, you know? And so, I mean, the life I was leading was all I knew. And the thing about alcoholism is it goes so slowly. It usually doesn't just, you just don't wreck the bus right away. It usually goes very, very slowly. And so my alcoholic life seemed pretty normal to me. I mean, it wasn't good. And I had a child by this time. As a matter of fact, I married a man from, graduated from Brazosport in 68. And, he called me about a year ago and made an amends to me. And, that was pretty cool. It was very cool. And it was one of those things where, you know, this program is fantastic in the sense of being able to rebuild the bridges, you know, of the damage that we've done. And on a spiritual plane, I absolutely love what's out there for me. But my life is falling apart, right? And one of the things that I realized when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 26 years old, and I came in here very disgraced, right? I mean, I knew I'd had a problem. I probably got sober, I would say, about 4 years after I knew I couldn't stop drinking. Are you guys up with me on that one? Yeah, to where, you know, I mean, I knew, first of all, I thought I couldn't stop rolling in the hay, if you know what I mean. You know what I mean? And that's putting it nicely. But I thought, oh my God, I've got to stop doing this. I've got a child. I've got a life. I've got to stop doing this. And what I realized, it never occurred to me that alcohol could instigate that behavior. Who would guess? Right? And I mean, I'm young. I'm single and young. Come on. You're with me on that, aren't you? Okay, good. So again, I always worry about the PTA here, people. So when I do come into Alcoholics Anonymous, one of the things, now keep in mind, you know, and I'm going to speed through this now because now I'm sober and now I'm into 25 years of my experience. I drank from basically 11, 12 to 26 years old. And lots of situations have gone on in my life, right? I've now got a 5-year-old child. I've drug her through, talk about incomprehensible demoralization. Any of you guys who drug your kids through this stuff, you know how painful that is. That is, can't even go there. It's just too painful. But I can tell you the relationship I have with my daughter today is unbelievable. My son has never seen me drink. But my daughter and I's relationship is just wonderful, and you can rebuild it. And my passion is working with women and children. I go to a treatment center in Austin that it's called Family House, and lots of times they get sent there, and they are not happy. You know, they had no idea they were going to get nailed until they got a drug test delivering that baby, and all of a sudden, you know, they're pissed. But I love working with women and children. I love giving them that hope, and they are the hardest group to work with. It's not easy to be having a kid in tow and you trying to get a job and do all these things. I mean, it's tough. But so I walk into Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is my experience. The laughter in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was something I hadn't heard in a long, long time. I mean, the bellow laughing was so spectacular. The people in the room looked just like you guys. I was expecting all old men. I'm old man in raincoats. I expected creepy guy from the 7-Eleven. All of you guys, you know. And that was not the case. I mean, there was people my age. There was three people in there I knew. That's never good, right? And so, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, oh my gosh. And I just remembered the laughter was so awesome. And, the other thing, there's lots I remember because I like to look back. Right? The second part of the third step says, take away my difficulties so that victory over them can bear witness to you. It doesn't say take away my difficulties so I'll feel better and be able to get that better job and that bigger house and head on down the road. It says so I can help you. See? And so I come in here and then this one gal named Michelle just, you know, gets all on me. And, you know how that is when they get all on you. You're like, And she's taken my phone number. And that was another thing that I think we've kind of lost in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a tendency to give our phone number, but they took my number. And so because I'm not going to call anybody. You know how people say, well, they're not ready. Oh, please don't let me make that decision. I'm ready. I'm just scared to death. I cannot pick that phone up. But if you call me, all of a sudden I'm feeling like somebody wants me because nobody's calling me. The bar is not calling, going, Katie, you hadn't been down here in a while. Come on down. The chili parlor, right? And so Michelle's calling me, hey, you need me to come by, you need me to get you. I mean, there is a lot to be said about that level of fellowship. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship wrapped around me like a cocoon. And I needed that. I needed that level of love. Well, I did fail to mention that this really handsome man took me actually to my first meeting. And he was celebrating 6 years of sobriety that day. And I remembered thinking, what is sobriety, right? And then he says, well, that's when we don't drink or drug or anything. And I'm like, sure. You know, I mean, how many of y'all, didn't you assume everybody's at least smoking pot out in the parking lot? I mean, oh, absolutely. It's like, oh, yeah, completely sober. Right. And you know, once again, you hang out here long enough and all of a sudden you do realize that they are 100% sober. They're not doing, you know. And I remember not knowing what the word serenity meant. It was like all this, you know, new stuff is coming at me. Well, I end up convincing this guy who had 6 years sober and was a huge big book thumper, I didn't know it at the time, and very big in service and all of this stuff, just took quite a liking to me. Now, you know that's against the AA moral and philosophical rules, right? And so I am a very convincing woman. And we were married for 20 years, just to let you know that. So, yes, we did get married, and we had another child, and this guy carried me through Alcoholics Anonymous like you wouldn't believe. Now, granted, he ended up being my sponsor, and I don't necessarily support all of this stuff, but this is my story, and I'm sticking to it, okay? And I had a woman that I pretended kind of like was my sponsor, and she heard my inventory, but I ran everything past him because that's just what I did. He told me everything, and he guided me, and he pointed me to the book, and he taught me the book, and he read the book to me because, once again, I mean, I don't know about you, but when you cheat all the way through school and they hand you this, you're like going, a book? Oh, come on. You got it on tape or video or anything? I mean, a book? Oh, it's like my childhood coming back to haunt me, you know? And I mean, I can read. I don't spell well. I can read, but I cannot comprehend. I mean, can you read a paragraph and go, somebody say, what'd that say? It's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I just read it. Didn't know you wanted me to know what I was reading while I was reading it. That's a whole nother. And I know you're sitting in these rooms. I know you know what I'm talking about. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was reading about Bill and reading the Tombstone and World War One, and I thought, oh, blah, 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 blah. I got nothing, man. And Jim and the Milk, what is up with that? And they, you know, I mean, it was, So, and needless to say, it has taken me a long time to even still get that, but I got it today. Well, so I'm tooling along, and Joe and I are together, you know, and I, oh my gosh, I remember just waking up in the morning being a big deal. Do y'all remember that when you're first sober and, you know, it's not like you heard the birds when you went to sleep, you know, and you're trying to go to sleep and you hear the birds, you know, that's always bad. And so, you know, you're just like, oh my God, you know, and I find myself at the grocery store at like 5 a.m. I'm drinking like 16 pots of coffee. You know, I'm just like, smoking about 800 cigarettes and loving life. You know, and that's all I knew, man. I mean, it was just like, I remember going in for a physical and the doctor giving me an exam and he said, oh, you know, you got a lot of fibroid cysts going on. He goes, do you drink much coffee? I said, yeah. You know, and he goes, how much coffee are you drinking? I said, well, about 6 pots. And he goes, and he'd been my OB forever. And he goes, you mean 6 cups? I said, no, about 6 pots. I drank about 3 in the morning, about 3 in the afternoon, he goes, good God, don't try to stop now, you know. Okay, he goes, you know, and I mean, he is panicked, you know, and my alcoholic life seems the only normal one, you know. I mean, I'm thinking that's pretty normal. It's amazing, isn't it, when you look back and you think, what was I thinking when I'm going to lob out to this doctor that I drink six pots of coffee a day? Who does that? Alcoholics Anonymous, that's where. I mean, you know, and now I can't drink a cup of real coffee after five. I mean, I'm up forever. But boy, not in early sobriety. Well, so Joe and I are tooling along, you know, and we're huge in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Pat Clater and I did the Chrysanthemum Conference, you know, and once again, I was most likable in everything, so I'm most likable in AA. And, you know, I know y'all don't know you vote people in, but I was voted in. And so I'm most likable, and I'm running everything, and Joe and I are starting meetings, and we're just, you know, just doing the deal. And it's fantastic, and I don't know what happened. I still really couldn't tell you what happened because we were so knee-deep in AA, and it's so subtle. But Joe said to me, he said, we need to go back to church. And I thought, I don't like that idea. And I had nothing really against the church except that I really believed, you know, in the 60s when my mom died, I had enough people say that God needed my mother that I just thought, you know, I want no part of that. I want no part of that. I don't really care much for him. I don't think he cares much for me, and I don't want anything to do with it. I wasn't raised on hellfire and brimstone. I was actually raised Catholic, where the guy was, you know, talking Latin, for God's sakes. I mean, you're just trying to figure out how to flick a booger on your sister, you know, in church, you know. And so, I mean, I got nothing out of church. And so Joe had always been drawn to Christianity, and so I thought, well, whatever. And so I said, you go to church and you know, if tell me and I'll go with you. And well, he finds a non-denominational church. Now I had no idea what non-denominational was about, but nowadays it's a little bit more popular, where they have the music up on the screen and you know what I mean, and it's young people, and they got a band, and I get in there, and I'm thinking, hey, man, this is pretty cool. And so the next thing you know, man, I am really digging church. And so I start to drift. Now, I don't realize this, but Joe and I start to drift towards church, and the next thing you know, I'm absolutely crazy about Jesus. Please hear what I'm saying. I got no AA program. I have completely walked away from Alcoholics Anonymous and found Jesus. And you people need to find Jesus. And oh my gosh. I mean, I single-handedly ran off every AA friend. I mean, have you ever had that friend that in AA that found Jesus and left AA? Now, you can find Jesus and stay in AA, and life is good because you got a balance, right? But you leave AA and find Jesus and come back to try to fix you heathens, and we got a problem. You know, now, I hated the sin, but I love the sinner. And I really hated the sinner, too. So, you know, if you want me to get honest about what was going on up here, and I ran that Jesus train for about 3 years. And Joe and I'll never forget when I had my Jesus breakdown. And that was when, and you got to understand, I absolutely love Jesus. I do. I love Jesus. Thank God that was my choice. You can pick, you know, Tupac, Oprah, if you want, or whoever you want to pick. But that's who I'm choosing. And so, you know, what I ended up getting out of this whole deal was I found I'm sitting at a light. I know that Tupac Oprah always gets everybody. Whoever that is. But I'm sitting at a red light, and I remember, do you guys remember when you could take a right on red? Yeah. I swear to God, that to me, that is better than the iPhone. It really was. It was like, oh my God, you can take a right on red. And I'm sitting at this light, and I remember this woman is not taking a right on red. Now, keep in mind, I am knee deep in Jesus. And this woman is not taking a right on red. I got no AA program. I've been 3 years. I have not even been to a meeting. I have not looked. I don't even know where my big book is or anything. And I'm trying to think about how I could just shove her into that intersection to teach her a lesson, all in the name of Jesus. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh. I mean, it was just that moment where you're like, And I got home and I told Joe, I said, Joe, I'm not doing well at all, honey. And he goes, I'm not doing well either, Katie. And I said, what are we going to do? And he goes, I think we need to go back to AA. And I said, I think we do. So we go down to the local AA meeting and we walk in there and everybody's still there, right? The laughter is still there. I'll never forget Ed H. beating his arm, you know, and Ed H. was talking away, you know, and oh, I just loved Ed. And I leaned over to Joe and I said, honey, we're home. And he said, I know. Now, you know, we were. We really were. But this is my story and this is what happened. And I am telling you, once again, when I went to find Jesus to enlarge my spiritual life, when I took that one piece out of the book, that's not what the book says. The book says, through self-sacrificing and work with others. See, I missed that. I just took one little line here and one little line there and one little line there. Well, Joe and I start going back to meetings. We get relief, but we don't get freedom. Now, I don't know what's happening. I still don't know. We're back in AA and it's feeling pretty good. But what I end up finding out is we never started to work the 12 steps again. We just went to meetings. And for me, I call that meeting-based sobriety. Now, that's not a bad thing. Bob and I have been talking about this. I pray every day how to grow in understanding and effectiveness for you to hear the message I'm here to carry to you. I believe God's asked me to carry this message. And let me tell you, it does not win everybody over. And I don't like that because I am the most popular. Okay, so I'm really not really liking that part of it. And God and I have had long talks about this. But He's chosen me. So, as Charlie said, well, thank God you're cute. Because that does help. Bob Bazan's mom said, you know, you're not very bright, so dress well. So, I'm going with the cute factor here. And that is, I love the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. This I crave. I absolutely love you people. You are my people. I actually feel more comfortable here than I do at church. I'm not knocking church, but I like a place where I'm with heathens, personally, if you want to know the truth. I like a place where people have been incomprehensible demoralization. Everyone, right? Yeah, it's hard to tell in church who the incomprehensible demoralization is. In here, I know it's everybody. And so I like that feeling. You know, I am so one with another drunk. And so Joe and I, we don't realize this, but I couldn't tell you where my big book was. I mean, I didn't know where my big book was. I knew plenty of AA. I'd already worked the steps. So, and Joe, same thing. And so we're moving along. And we act as if alcohol was the problem. We are now living a life based on relief from an AA meeting where I've got to get to another meeting to get relief. Because I've got that malady of self all over me. Now, I don't know this, but I never get the freedom. I just get the relief. You know that feeling where you got to have a meeting? I got to have a meeting. I got to get that laughter. I got to get this. Now, don't hear that that's wrong. I love that about AA. But when I'm coming to the meeting to get from the meeting and not bring the solution to the meeting, I got it all mixed up, right? So I call that meeting-based sobriety, and that's very shallow part of Alcoholics Anonymous. The meetings are very, very important. I think I've beat that dead horse, okay? You know where I'm coming from on this. But I had no idea that that's what I was doing. I had no idea that I was hooking my wagon to this level of sobriety. I guarantee there were plenty of people trying to help me with the 12 steps. As a matter of fact, there's one gal, she had 1 year sober. I'll never forget this. I had 15 years sober. And I loved what she was sharing in the meetings. And I pulled her aside and asked her if she'd sponsor me. And she was blown away. You know, you have 15 years. You know, I only have one. I said, yeah, but man, you are solid. I recognize that and I want a piece of that. And she goes, okay. Well, so she goes, come on out to the parking lot. Let's talk. And we go out to the parking lot and she just railroads me with the self piece. Railroads me. And I swear she is not railroading me more than 5 minutes. And I'm thinking, you got 1 year of sobriety. You got no idea what you're talking about or who you're talking to. And she kept saying, there is absolutely no God in your program. You are so self-driven. And I'm thinking, shut up. Shut up. And I'll never forget driving away thinking,
Well, that was a stupid decision on my part. I have to tell her that's not going to work out. So needless to say, it didn't. I mean, there was no way. I was so full of pride, so full of ego. Oh, my gosh. Well, then, you know, as life would have it, you know, that line out of the book that I love so much, I keep it written here so I don't have to keep pulling my book out. But it's on page 14 where it says, it's imperative to work with others. How appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, remember I put a period there, it says, through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Well, Joe and I are tooling along. We're doing, you know, now I'm at 15 years sober. I was at 6 years when I came back in, right? I'm almost 9 years doing, you know, just meetings, no step work, no nothing, no sponsor. And, you know, that's very seductive, isn't it? Self-sponsorship, right? Grade and Moan papers. 100. Check, check, check. I am so good. And Joe gets sick, and oh my gosh, you guys, it was so bizarre. He was sick for about 3 years till I couldn't figure out what it was. And you talk about driven by fear. That level of self-centeredness, when I knew Joe was sick, we had a family, for God's sakes. Come on. Let's do it, man. We can make this happen. And somebody said, well, you need better insurance to find out what's wrong with him. And I said, well, we're both self-employed. What should I do? And she said, go drive a school bus. Tink. How many of y'all like those quick decisions? There's no asking God, because there is no God in life. God took away my drink problem. That's where I needed him. I got it from here. I mean, I'll pull you in when it really gets bad, but I don't really need you for that. I mean, surely the bus looks like a great idea. Don't you think so? Three people say yes. Let's do it. Good idea. You know what I mean? That's how I operated. I mean, I don't really need God for my children, my job. It was that pinch hitter God when I only really needed God. So I go down, I drive this school bus. Oh my God. Am I in over my head? I mean, on day one, I'm in over my head. I've got a whole nother fitness career I've had for years and years and years, and I'm squeezing the bus in, right? And I'm telling you guys, everybody should drive a school bus once. You really should. I swear I don't go by a bus where I don't look at the driver and wave and, you know, but you cannot imagine. I got instant bus insurance, right? Instant. I mean, I had HMO right away. We were ready to find out what was wrong with Joe. And I am absolutely stark, raving crazy in self-centeredness. Are you with me on this? I mean, do you know that? When it says self will run riot, I've never been in a riot. I've seen them on TV. They look pretty doggone scary, don't they? You don't know where the bullets are coming from, where the Molotov cocktail's coming from. I mean, you don't know where somebody's going to hit you over the head with the billy club. That was me in the bus, driving down the road. Self will run riot. Oh, my God. And if you pissed me off, I just popped that old stop sign right out. Go ahead and try to drive past that baby. It's about an $800 ticket. And everybody's watching. And I mean, that is crazy. And I loved it. I loved it. The power I had in that big old bus was fabulous. One time I got mad at the kids, the middle schoolers. I had a lower end income group that I loved, and I had a high income group that bugged me. And they had not been speaking to me that day, and I had just come off a very bad run with my husband's illness, and I pulled the bus off the road, which you're not really supposed to do, and you hit that air brake, and that air brake goes, tsh! Well, the kids, I mean, you do that, and it's like somebody doing a bomb squad, you know, thing. They're like, everybody looks up. Instant stop talking. And I get up and I decide I'm going to chew out every one of those kids for disrespecting me. And I swear, I'm like this. And I swear those kids are like this. They're middle school. They're going. They are waiting for me to pull a gun. I know they are. And I mean, by the time they get off the bus, they're almost like running past me a bit like I'm a leopard. You know, You know, I swear I look back at that and I just think, oh my God, I'd lost my mind. But my husband had been diagnosed with a brain tumor. And, you know, guys, the level of self-centeredness I carry with me is pretty shocking. And I'm very well aware of it. And I don't know that I can entirely get rid of it without God's help. And let me tell you, He's trying to help, and I'm trying to show up as best I can. But when the doctor said to me, he has a brain tumor and he's laying in the hospital bed, my very first thought was that I was going to have to drive that bus forever. See, that's how self-centered I am. Now, I didn't say it out loud. Nobody heard it. Nobody saw it. But that's the level of self-centeredness I carry with me. My God, I got to drive that damn bus forever. Honey, you're going to be okay. And as it turns out, he was not okay. We were both in untreated alcoholism. I was so riddled with insanity of trying to keep this family together that what ended up happening is Joe ended up going back out after 23 years. And he had no program. He did not have a program. I blamed it. For many years in sobriety, I blamed it on the tumor. And you know what? We didn't have an AA program. You know, you cannot take care of the highs and lows in life. You got no program, it's too dangerous. And one of the things is it started with pills. And we lose so many people in AA behind pills. You know, and it breaks my heart because I don't think we realize that we're walking around with this malady. It, you know, if you can't find your, if you haven't read your big book, if you don't have a sponsor, if you're only going to meetings, you're doing what I did, and then all of a sudden you break a tooth, you go in for what's a routine root canal, they suggest Vicodin. Sure, you're going to need some Vicodin. For God's sakes, it's a root canal. And the next thing you know, you're taking a lot of Vicodin and you're rescheduling dental work. Right? And then, you know, the booze is sure to come. I mean, it's the course of the disease. And that's what I'm here to say. My experience is that my husband at 23 years sober, I don't think would have necessarily gone back out behind the brain tumor because he wasn't going to die. It was benign, for God's sakes. I mean, it was a shocking story. I mean, I could get into his whole story as to how Joe could have lived. But the truth of the matter is he ended up dying of a heroin overdose. Yeah, in a halfway house. Oh, the story gets terrible. But I come in here and I tell you the truth of my experience because I want to be able to tell the truth. I care about your feelings, but at the same time I want to tell you, I want to share the truth about this disease. It is so cunning, baffling, and powerful. Be careful. If you're not doing the deal, you got no safety net. You got God's grace, but it's like a light switch. And when it turns off, it just goes click. You know what I mean? And we're out of God's grace. And so what I think is the biggest thing in the whole wide world is what I call the second surrender. And it's what brought me to my knees. And it was the second surrender to the third step, self. The self-peace I didn't get. I didn't get the self-peace for years. I mean, I thought I was just working on my character defects. You know what I mean? I thought you could. Book tells me I can't wish them away or think them away no matter how hard I try. The book says I make terms that, you know, I make terms with God that I am going to stay close to Him and perform His work well. What does that look like? 4 through 9, I got to clear away the debris. I got to make an amends to Miss Shaw later. Mm-hmm. That's the 9. Be making an amends tomorrow to an old boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It says all. I missed that line forever. I just made amends to the people that my ass was on fire with when I first got sober. Yeah, all of a sudden that second surrender comes around, man. I am willing to do whatever it takes. I'm in so much pain. I am between self-righteous and self-pity. I got sorrow like out the wazoo turned into self-pity behind death. Well, that's a good one, isn't it? It's hard to argue with that one. Yeah, and I mean, I am riding that train as hard as I can. Thank God I got a sponsor today that won't let me do that. She loves me enough to go ahead and tell me the truth. And I got to have it. Well, this second surrender, what my sponsor does with me is, so my troubles are of my own making, period. I don't get to go anywhere but there. That's where she always takes me. I was just madder than hell at my husband, my current husband, Charlie. I don't want to call you current, my only husband here. I'm not like my father. But although I did for a while there feel that way. This thing starts to feel like a snake around my neck. It does. It can scare the dickens out of you, too. But I was mad as heck at Charlie, and it was justifiable. Are y'all with me on this one? Especially at your husband. You call your sponsor, and you just know she's going to go, well, he was so out of line saying that. You just know that. She has never said that before. I just know she's going to say that. And she goes, well, Katie, the inventory is yours, not the other man's. And I go, oh, shut up. It darn sure is his. It clearly is his. And thank God I've got someone like that in my life that absolutely will not let me fry my husband. See, I'll fry those I love the most especially. But then you know who else I fry that I love the most? Is people in AA. Oh, boy, you guys can bug the crud out of me. Don't you know that? Big Head Bob. Oh, yeah. Loudmouth Lori. Oh, yeah. There she goes again. Sharon at another meeting. Oh, my God. See, I gotta remember that we're all in this deal together, right? And I have got to realize that most of the time, for some reason, why ever I'm trying to knock you is because I'm scared. But I got to knock you in order for me to be up there. And I got to go back to my troubles are of my own making. Because if they're of your making, well, that's a big problem for me, isn't it? You're going to have to change for me to be okay. And I don't think that's going to happen. So that third step, surrender, that surrender to self peace has taken me a long time. You know, it says in that inventory process, it says self manifested in various ways is what caused our failure. We had to get down to the causes and conditions. I'm going to have to learn a lot about self so I even know what to take to God. I'm not learning about self so I can better Katie, because self can't fix self, right? I did that for a long, long time too. And I tried to act right. And granted, now there is some good in acting, having good behavior. But the truth of the matter is it was all so I could take it to God in 6 and 7. I had to find all the things that were objectionable. I had to look at my behavior behind spending. If I have financial problems, I darn sure can't go buy those shoes anytime I want them, right? It's the cause and effect. I got to learn these principles in life, and I got to live by principles, not by motives. Oh, this is all so brand new to me. And I'm 17 years sober, thinking you got to be kidding me. So I get into literature-based stuff, right? I get into big literature-based stuff because I need to learn what this book is telling me. All of a sudden, I've got a whole new, I'm desperate. I've got the desperation of a drowning man. I am not doing well at all. And I realized that vodka's not that far off the table. The compulsion to drink actually came back. I told Charlie, I want to drink. And you know, he, bless his heart, he hates for me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. He had no AA program either at the time, and he said, well, just don't drink without me. Oh. That's almost as good as keep coming back. Yeah, yeah. Now, the truth is it did work for a little while. See, pride, when you got some time, how many of y'all know you can stay sober on pride for a while? Oh, yeah. I ain't going to drink. I might kill myself, but I ain't going to drink. You know what I mean? And that's sad. I mean, we chuckle about that, but that is the truth. Well, I'm going to end up wrapping it up here, but just to tie all this self-peace together, because that, see, I really was living a program based on the abstinence of alcohol. Now, I wouldn't have told you I was, but I absolutely was. And when I began to understand this self-peace, that's what I told you with this relationship I have with my Creator today. I sit in my time with Him. My quiet time is time of prayer. It's not Eastern, you know, Tupac, Oprah stuff. I don't do that. If you do that, man, I say more power to you. I really do. But there was a big misunderstanding behind meditation for me. I thought Eastern religion meditation was what they were talking about. I looked up the word in the 1935 dictionary. It says deep thought. Well, heck, I can do that. I sit in plenty of thought, you know. And so I get into this relationship with God, and when I realize where I'm off kilter is when you disturb me and I go into thinking. Think, 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 think. Think, 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 think. Right? It goes, oh, and it picks up. And then before you know it, and then. That is when I'm in complete self-driven. And when you bug me and I can go right to prayer, man, I am spiritually doing well. That's not my experience every day, let me tell you. But the truth of the matter is what I did is I got a hold of these tapers, and I found big book CDs, and I started learning the big book on CDs. And I love, you know, my buddy Bob, dear friend of mine, one of my great big book leaders. I love the way he explains the book. I got it. I got what he's talking about. I know what I'm working towards, right? And that's what I love. The lines in the book that are the biggest lines in the world to me, I mean, my big book is marked up like crazy, and I know people say there's people out there that, you know the book forward and backwards and don't do it. I don't think that's our biggest problem in AA personally. I think there's more people who don't know the book. You know what I'm saying? And that's all I'm saying, because I don't want you to not like me. I do want you to vote me in at the end of the weekend as the best speaker, okay? No offense. But my big book is marked up, and I mean, I got it. I'm getting it. You know what I mean? I understand what when God worked through Bill, what he was talking about. And it says, this one is the one line that just blew me away when I read it. It's on page 20. It says, our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. Page 20. I went, oh, shut up. Shut up. That is not what I'm thinking. I would like the job, the house, the kids, the car, and I'll hold the door for you. Okay? And that's about where I'm going to go with the whole deal, right? And the truth of the matter is, guys, is that believe it or not, in all my prayer and meditation and everything that I do, it's all about helping others. I sponsor a slew of women. Oh, my gosh. See, when you got something to share, people want it. You know what I mean? They all of a sudden, you got a message with depth and weight. They want it. It's like, it was unbelievable. I mean, I do the deal. And one of the coolest things that I love is I teach, you know, that for some reason there's some sort of silly myth in AA that there's not enough strong women. Do we hear that all the time? This makes me crazy. We women have convinced the men of that one. But I won't even go there. So I said, watch. So I have this meeting at my house one Monday a month where I'm teaching women how to take women through the big book. It's like, you know, I had 50 women over there. We did it for 2 years. I have a sponsorship meeting that I do with all my sponsees on Monday night. We do the big book experience where we have Bob and someone else come in every year, which we invite you. November the 4th, we'll be having it up in Austin. It's unbelievable. It'll be Bob D and Chris S out of New Jersey. We hope you come. Charlie and I do a big book study that's got 175 people a week studying the big book line by line, word by word. I mean, we're out there. I take a meeting to treatment centers once a week. I mean, I'm out there doing the deal, and I had no idea that God said, stay close to me and perform my work well, which means take care of my kids, clear away that debris, stay in 10 and 11 and take care of my children, and I'll take care of all your problems. He refers to that like 4 times in the book. And I mean to tell you, I've never been happier, guys, ever. And I've been sober 25 years, and I've been the happiest I've ever been for 7. And that's what I'm talking about. That's the AA program I had no idea was available. Those hinky little 12 steps, I already worked them. You know what I mean? And that's what's doing the deal. So I'd like to close on this. Something I got out of Daily Reflections. It says, what glorious mysteries paradoxes are. They do not compute. Yet when recognized and accepted, they reaffirm something in the universe beyond human logic. When I face a fear, I am given courage. When I support a brother or sister, my capacity to love myself is increased. When I accept pain as a part of the growing experience of life, I realize a greater happiness. When I look at my dark side, I am brought into a new light. When I accept my vulnerabilities and surrender to a higher power, I am graced with an unforeseen strength. I stumbled through the doors of AA in disgrace, expecting nothing from life, and I have been given hope and dignity. Miraculously, the only way to keep this gift of the program is to pass it on. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I love you. Look how
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, and you can vote at the end of the meeting.